Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Instructions by Maharaj Prithu, text 24. Yaudharat karam raja.
Yaudharat karam raja.
Praja dharmesh prasikshayam.
Praja dharmesh prasikshayam.
Prajanam samalam bhukte.
Prajanam samalam bhukte.
Bhagam cha swam jahati sa.
Bhagam cha swam jahati sa.
Ya udharat karam raja.
Ya udharat karam raja.
Praja dharmeshra shikshayan.
Praja dharmeshra shikshayan.
Prajanam samalam bhukte. Bhagam cha swam jahati sa.
Bhagam cha swam jahati sa.
Ya udharat karam raja.
Ya udharat karam raja.
Praja dharmeshra shikshayam.
Praja dharmeshra shikshayam.
Prajanam samalam bhukte.
Prajanam samalam bhukte.
Bhagam cha swam jahati sa.
Anyone,
king or governor,
king or governor,
would direct, exact,
kalam,
taxes,
taxes,
raja,
raja,
king,
king,
praja,
praja,
the citizens,
citizens,
dharmeshu,
dharmeshu,
in executing their respective duties, ashikshayan,
ashikshayan,
without teaching them how to execute
their respective duties.
Prajana
of the citizens.
Shamalam,
impious.
Bhunkte,
enjoys.
Bhagam,
fortune.
Cha,
also.
Swam,
own.
Jahati,
gives up.
Sa,
that king.
Translation. Any king who does not teach his citizens about their respective duties in terms of varna and ashrama, but who simply exacts tolls and taxes from them, is liable to suffer for the impious activities which have been performed by the citizens. In addition to such degradation, the king also loses his own good fortune. Purport. A king, a government, governor, or president should not take the opportunity to occupy his post without also discharging his duty. He must teach the people within the state how to observe the divisions of varna and ashrama. If a king neglects to give such instructions and is simply satisfied with levying taxes, then those who share in the collection, namely all the government servants and the head of the state, are liable to share in the impious activities of the general masses. The laws of nature are very subtle. For example, if one eats in a place which is very sinful, he shares in the resultant reaction of the sinful activities performed there. It is a Vedic system, therefore, for a householder to call Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to eat at ceremonial performances in his house, because the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas can immunize him from sinful activities. But it is not the duty of rigid Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to accept invitations everywhere. There is, of course, no objection to taking part in feasts in which prasad is distributed. There are many subtle laws which are practically unknown to people in general. But the Krishna consciousness movement is very scientifically distributing all this Vedic knowledge for the benefit of the people of the world. Translation again. Any king who does not teach his citizens about their respective duties in terms of varna and ashrama, but who simply exacts tolls and taxes from them, is liable to suffer for the impious activities which have been performed by the citizens. In addition to such degradation, the king also loses his own fortune. Om Agnanachimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So you see, or at least you hear, that living in this world is much more complicated than you even thought. You had considered that you have to make a living, and you have to support your family, and push on through this world. Actually, that journey through this world is described by Prahlad Maharaj in his discussions with the Python Man in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. Actually, the Python Man explains to Prahlad that there is a mountain, and that mountain is covered with sharp stones. So what do we do during our journey in this world? We ally ourselves with others, spouse, friends, family members, neighbors, country persons, and we proceed to try to walk up the steep side of the mountain, and we have bare feet, and remember, the mountain is covered with sharp stones. But we are determined to make the climb, and we tell ourselves, just tolerate the pain and agony from bare feet, our bare feet contacting the sharp stones on the side of the mountain. Society is urging you onward. Climb the mountain, succeed. Get respect. Get prestige. Get self-satisfaction from having good income, having all the possessions you need, especially have options. This is considered so important for life today. Because after all, here in Australia, you don't simply expect to survive. You're not in Bangladesh, Pakistan. You're in Australia. So you expect to have a life that flourishes with ample facilities. But to achieve that goal, you have to climb the mountain barefoot. And the mountain is covered with sharp stones. But because you have allies, you have your family members, your spouses, or as the contemporary language says, your partners, and you think by their association, the pain of your bare feet on the sharp stones will be lessened. The thought of climbing the mountain covered with sharp stones, the thought of climbing it alone is terrifying, isn't it? You want others around you to help with the pain or distract your mind from the pain. Now, if someone says to you, why bother climbing the mountain in the first place? That's very upsetting to you, because you've been pushed since childhood to climb the mountain. That's what human beings do. And in this way, their life has meaning and purpose. Just leave it at that. No need to discuss any further. But Srimad Bhagavatam teaches you to question the whole climb. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is very dangerous. It's the literary incarnation of Krishna, who himself is very dangerous. You know the advice given by the Goswamis. If you're at all interested in ordinary family, society, and love, don't go near the bank of the Jamuna, where there is an unlimitedly attractive teenager playing his flute. Don't go near there. You'll lose all your incentive to climb the mountain covered with sharp stones. Now, of course, if you're going to climb a mountain that's covered with sharp stones, at least you should have some shoes on. But no, you're barefoot. In other words, we don't know how to properly equip ourselves for the journey through this world. We embark on a very severe journey, and we don't even equip ourselves properly. But what do we have going for us, we think? Pride, self-esteem. And others encourage you in that way. Yes, you can do it, or you must do it. And we crown ourselves with so many self-created duties. It's my duty to do this. It's my duty to do that. We don't realize that these self-created duties bring reactions. Because if you execute a duty without understanding the fullness of your real duty, you get karmic reactions. This is what Bhritu Maharaj is explaining in this verse. Yat udaret karang raja praja dharmesh shikshayan. Alright, someone takes responsibility as head of state. But if they do not teach their citizens how to act in the designated way for living in this material world, then that executive head of state suffers for all the bad karma of the people in his land. Not only that, but whatever good karma he or she may have managed to accumulate, that's all lost. So it's a very dangerous thing to take responsibility for others. You have to know what you're doing. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Rishabhdev instructs his sons that don't be a spiritual teacher, guru. Don't be a mother, father, or husband. Don't take any responsibility in this world whatsoever unless you can rescue your dependents from the cycle of repeated birth and death. It's a very stern instruction, very sobering. We're intoxicated by dreams of material happiness and satisfaction. So we need to hear these sobering instructions by Lord Rishabhdev, by Prithu Maharaj. Otherwise, we just get too delirious. We get too dreamy. We hallucinate. This is why Bhagavatam instructs Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Always hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Daily hear Srimad Bhagavatam, because we have this tendency to lose ourselves in the intoxication brought about by material pride, so-called self-esteem. I can do it. I must do it. Just see how I'm taking responsibility. Just see how I'm doing my duty. But what is the fullness of your duty? Certainly, the Bhagavatam is not about irresponsibility to the family. But at the same time, the Bhagavatam is saying, you better know the real purpose of the family. Because any time you take responsibility for others, and you don't know what you're doing, you don't know the fullness of the real responsibility, then you will get reactions. So Lord Rishabhdi says, don't do it unless. Don't be a mother. Sounds unnatural. No doubt to ladies. Don't be a mother. Don't be a father. Don't be a husband. Don't be a guru. Don't take any kind of responsibility. This is what Preetu is saying about, particularly about the head of state. Any executive chief will suffer unless he can teach people how to live properly. But if he simply collects taxes, if he simply collects the GST and the rates and all that, but he can't deliver knowledge of what is the ultimate responsibility in life, then that head of state has to suffer the sinful reactions of his people. So life is very serious. Still, the Krishna Bhakta, the Vaishnav, can be joyful. Indeed, one of the characteristics of a devotee is that he or she is jolly, happy. Because through proper knowledge, the devotee knows how to live in this world without getting reactions. But what about the past, you may say? The devotee may be living in harmony with the Vedic laws now, but what about the past activities? But Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Prichaja, Mamekam Sharanam Prichaja. You surrender to me, Mamekam Prichaja, I'll take care of your past reactions. So this is why Krishna Bhaktas can be jolly. Their past is dealt with, and the present and future, they can handle through knowledge. They're not ignorant. A Krishna Bhakta understands that any time you take responsibility for anyone, you have to know what you're doing fully. So this information is very sobering, as I said. It makes us cautious. It makes us think deeply. Sometimes, in our rebellious moments, we get angry. Isn't there anything I can do in this world without worrying about karma, reactions? Every step I take, there's a Vedic injunction. You can't do this, you can't do that. I just want to be free from all that and just act according to me. What I want at the moment. Why do I have to be chained up by all these Vedic principles? But a life without being bound by Vedic principles means animal life. Animals are free to act according to the modes of material nature. Animals are totally dominated by the modes of material nature. But a human being is meant to live a lifestyle of becoming free from the modes of material nature. When we rebel and we say, I want to do what I want, I don't care. Basically what we are saying then is, let nature's laws act upon me. I don't care. Nature's laws are very oppressive. How can we be free? How can we have autonomy when we're in the grip of nature's laws? Another point I was explaining Thursday at the happiness event at the University of Melbourne, that ordinarily people think happiness is made up of three things. A sense of belonging. You have your own social network, and they make you feel that you are recognized, appreciated. You're known to someone. Wouldn't it be horrible that no one knows you? Oh, it's a very agonizing feeling. Did you know that the time that has the most suicide rate is birthdays? Someone is having their birthday and no one knows, no one cares. Those are the most suicide prone people. Because you want a social network that appreciates you. You don't want to spend your birthday alone, do you? You want to be surrounded by your family and your little friends, right? They give you presents? Yes, it makes you feel good, right? What if no one ever celebrated your birthday? That'd be horrible, wouldn't it? Your mother and father didn't do anything for your birthday. None of your little friends knew about your birthday. Oh, you'd be in agony, wouldn't you? Well, some people want to commit suicide because of that. They're in some strange town far away from their home place. No one knows them. No one cares. So in ordinary happiness, there's this natural desire for belonging. I belong to someone. I belong to some people. I belong to my family. I belong to my spouse. I belong to my ethnic group. I belong to a country. Ordinarily, materially speaking, that need is always there. And then the second one is a sense of mastery, competence, because you spend so much time at work. Yes? So you want to feel that I have ability, and you want to be recognized for that ability. You want to feel that I'm successful in my occupation, my artistry, my business. That gives you a sense of self-worth. You can hold your head up high when you go back to India and visit your relatives. They can congratulate you on having established yourself in Australia. And you can tell them, oh, how wonderful it is, how happy I am there. You don't tell them the truth, but because they don't want to hear it. You are living the dream for them. So, sense of belonging and a sense of mastery, competence. I'm good at what I do. And then, finally, there's a sense of autonomy. I can do what I want. When I'm speaking at our retreats for young university students from India, as well as young professionals who've finished school, young professionals from India who are now working. So, I explain to them, I say, I know what you're thinking about your life in Australia. Something attracts you amidst all the wildness. What is it that attracts you? Although around you is such social mayhem and wildness, what attracts you in the West is the autonomy. You can do what you want to do and no one cares. You can experiment. You can do this. You can do that. Your grandparents back in Gujarat, they'll never know. So when I explain that to this young audience, they're all nodding their head, yes. There's something intriguing about the sense of autonomy in Australia. Whereas in India, you always have to be thinking, right? What do the others think about me? What is their opinion? But in Australia, you never have to think about that. People will criticize you for thinking about others. Just do whatever you want to do. Who cares what others think? So this sense of autonomy seems very attractive. I can do whatever I want, experiment the way I want, eat what I want, live life as I want. No one will bother me. This is great. And I don't have to attend a wedding every other weekend. It seems fascinating, yes? But at the same time, when I'm talking to these students and young professionals, I say, at the same time, you're thinking, but here in Australia, they go too far. I can never do that. But just a little bit like that, that would be very good, very nice. But not all the way. It's too wild. I could never be like that. Changing partners every 2 weeks. And but a little bit of experimentation. Breaking out of the Indian mold will do you no harm. So this sense of autonomy is a major component of material happiness. That you have options. But that's material happiness. When you analyze under the microscope of Srimad Bhagavatam, when you analyze material happiness, you see it is very faulty and problematic. How can you have genuine autonomy? How can you have options when you're under the gun of material nature? You're forced by your uncontrolled mind and senses. You know what Prahlad Maharaj compares that to. He compares it to a man with 5 wives. He comes home from work and each of the 5 wives is pulling, come with me, come with me, come to my room, come to my room. I think there may be a problem with that example these days, and that many persons would think, this is very nice. But Prahlad Maharaj didn't mean it in that way. And you have to think deeply to see how it's actually an undesirable situation. All at the same time, one is pulling you, come with me. The other is pulling you, no, come with me. So Prahlad Maharaj says, this is like your mind and senses. Simultaneously all pulling you in different directions. So how can you be free? The foolish man in such a situation with 5 wives might think, oh, I'm so popular. I can choose which one I'll be with. And, but no, they're all pulling at him at the same time. It's not that one is saying, all right, I'll wait when you finish with her, then you come to me. No. Each of the 5 is saying, come, come, come. You're being pulled in so many directions at the same time. This is what life is like when we have uncontrolled senses. So where is the freedom? Then when you consider the lifestyle that Prithu Maharaj is presenting as the genuine human lifestyle, it looks like so much control, so much regulation. But a human life is meant to be regulated. We've been so victimized by materialistic propaganda that we think human life is meant to just be for doing whatever you like, whatever you feel. This gospel is spreading all over the world, even in India. Give up the old ways. What is this regulation, Vedic injunctions? It's just Hindu granny folklore. Just do what you feel. Why be always chained by this sense of duty and responsibility? Your only duty and commitment is to your senses. So that kind of living is considered to be advanced. And what Prithu Maharaj is saying is considered to be old-fashioned. Every step you take, you've got to worry about a reaction. See, like, there's no fun to that, right? It's a karmic reaction for everything. Why not just do whatever you like, whatever you feel you can justify to yourself, and leave it at that? So we have a battle going on now between what is real human life and what is the illusion of human life. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, the Krishna conscious society is trying to establish real human civilization. So from time to time we need to question ourselves. Do I think like a human being? Or am I thinking like all the materialistic propaganda that's been inserted in me? Why do I have this notion that material happiness means freedom, it means you have options, when I'm completely under the gun of my material senses and mind? It's like last night, we had a very nice gathering of persons, some practicing bhakti, others very interested. And they were in their 20s and 30s. So I shocked them by telling them something which surprisingly they never thought about so deeply. I said, guess what? You will get old. You will get old. What do you think that's going to be like? Ooh. Sounds horrible. We're so fixed on the present moment that we don't understand what material nature is doing to us. Time is destroying us. So where is the political movement that's going to defeat time? But the Krishna conscious movement is so powerful, it's taking on, it's fighting time. It's fighting material nature. It's teaching people how to get out of the grip of time and material nature. So even though the body is temporary, still it has value. This is what Prahlad Maharaj teaches. Komara acharet prakyo dharmam bhagavatam yaha durlabham manasam janma tarap yadruvam artidam. From the very beginning of life, why wait till you're old and gray if you live that long to take up seriously your spiritual life? Start as young as possible. Look at the asset that you have. You have the human body. Although it's temporary, it still has value, artha. It gives you the advanced consciousness to understand the science of the Supreme. So take what is so difficult to get, a human body, and even though it's temporary, use it to achieve the highest goal. The example given in the 8th canto is about an axe with a wooden handle. To make the wooden handle of the axe, you take wood from a tree. Yet, although the wood comes from the tree, it can make a handle of an axe that can chop down the tree. So similarly, although this body comes from material nature, it can be utilized properly to chop down the tree of material existence. This is what Krishna asks in Bhagavad Gita. Aspatta enam suviruta mulam. Get to the root of material existence and pull it out. Chop the tree down of material nature at the root. This is how powerful bhakti is. So Prithu knows that I've got to train my citizens in how to live a regulated life. He's never bewildered by the madness of let them be free, let them do whatever they like. He knows he'll get their reactions by allowing them to just run wild. Just like parents will not allow their children to do whatever they want. Will your parents allow you to do whatever you want? No. The head of state should treat his citizens like they're dependent children. He has to instruct them. He speaks sweet words. Sometimes he chastises them. He sees to their protection from criminals and hunger. It's a very serious task to take responsibility on any level, whether you're head of state or you're the head of your family. When you understand what the goal of human life is, the system is not so, you don't think it's so severe. But if you think that the purpose of human life is just to enjoy your temporary mind and senses, then yes, you'll have a problem. I just want to do what I want, when I feel like it. And that's what the media is bombarding you with. Just do what you feel. Just worry about your happiness at the present moment. There's nothing more than that. This is the tragedy of the current so-called civilization. They don't understand how serious life is. So serious that even if you disregard all proper regulation, still nature will act on you. So what kind of autonomy is that? The example Srila Prabhupada would always give. You may be a criminal and think, I don't care for the laws of the state. But still, regardless of how you feel, the laws of the state will act on you. You'll be apprehended, you'll have to suffer. So we need to change our vision of what is civilization. And these instructions by Prithu Maharaj are so important because they're teaching us how grave the situation is to have a human body. Animal life doesn't have this gravity because animal life is totally under the modes of material nature. But human beings have advanced consciousness to get out of the grip of the modes of material nature. During the Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it would seem sometimes that he had to deal with material nature. But of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all energies emanate from him. There's no difference between Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. As I often explain, when Krishna wants to feel love in separation, he appears as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to be the supreme enjoyer, he appears as Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya attempted to go to Vrindavan, he received the help from Prataparuja Maharaj, who ordered his servants to, in every village in Orissa, on the road, the path that Mahaprabhu would take on his way to Vrindavan, in every village make 3 or 4 new houses and stock them all with sufficient grains and foodstuffs. And for crossing the river, have a new boat for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only that, wherever in the river Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes his bath, or wherever he just crosses the river, mark that place as a tirtha, a pilgrimage site. I want to take my bath there. Indeed, I want to die there. So this is the executive head of state facilitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now remember, as we explained yesterday, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first discussed Lord Chaitanya with King Prataparuja, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told him that he never sees kings even in dreams. But because of the king's pure bhakti, and because Lord Chaitanya's devotees kept recommending the king, the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was softened. But externally, even though Mahaprabhu recognized Prataparuja as a great devotee, because of the externals of his being a king, Lord Chaitanya didn't want to go near him. He told his associates, he may be a great devotee, but he's got one problem. In one word, king. Because ordinarily, an executive head of state means someone who's very absorbed in worldly affairs and worldly enjoyment. Just like, remember, some years ago, you had a candidate for prime minister. Eventually, he became prime minister when his party won. And right before the election, it was discovered that during a trip to New York City, he had spent the night at a lap dancing club. But he handled it. He handled the controversy in a very admirable way. Admirable, that is, as ordinary persons would see it. He just confessed, yeah, I was a bit of a goose that night, but I told my wife. And then he gave the ultimate Siddhanta. What do you want out of me anyway? I'm no holy Joe. And the people said, yeah, that's right, that's a real leader. He's humble. He admits no one is holy, he's not holy. All right, he was a goose one night, but, you know. He told his wife, yeah, that's pretty good, you know. In other words, do what you like, but tell your wife afterwards. So his poll rating soared. Instead of it being a liability, it became an asset. I'm no holy Joe. Oh, that's the kind of leader we want. Lord Chaitanya didn't want to associate with Prabhupada Maharaj because generally king means royal opulence, sense enjoyment, political intrigue. But his associates kept pushing him. This king is no ordinary king. He's a great devotee. And Lord Chaitanya would say, that may be, but he's a king. I don't want to see him. People will criticize me. What is this person in the renounced order of life wearing saffron, associating with a king? But they kept pushing Lord Chaitanya. Finally, Lord Chaitanya told them, look, you keep talking like that and I'll go somewhere else. And that really upset the devotees. Oh no, we've gone too far. What to do? But eventually, Lord Chaitanya did give audience to the king and even embrace the king. As Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Lord Chaitanya bestowed his mercy on King Prataparudra in three ways: with his body, with his mind, and with his words. He drowned Prataparudra Maharaj in mercy. Prataparudra Maharaj paid his obeisances and got up and paid his obeisances again and got up and paid his obeisances again. He's trembling with ecstasy, and Lord Chaitanya embraces him. So many devotees had recommended the king. And the recommendations by devotees never go in vain. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to show the proper example, the proper external example. But eventually, he demonstrated the superiority of the internal lila by embracing the king. So now, the king knows Mahaprabhu wants to go to Vrindavan. The king helps. He'd already helped Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri. How? By arranging that Mahaprabhu stays at the solitary, peaceful place of Kashi. Now he's going to use his executive power to help Mahaprabhu make his journey to Vrindavan. So in every village in Orissa, new houses were built, stocking grains and other foodstuffs. There was a new boat to take Lord Chaitanya over the river. So that was Orissa. Everything went so smoothly. The king had two government assistants to accompany Mahaprabhu, Madaraj and Hari Chandan. And then as Mahaprabhu was leaving, The king sent all his queens on the backs of elephants. The elephants had tents on them, and the queens were there. The elephants carried them. And the queens all lined up on the side of the road to bid farewell to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he left on his way to Vrindavan. So even though they were seeing Mahaprabhu from a distance, because after all, they were queens, still they were overwhelmed with the ecstasy of bhakti and shed tears of ecstasy. This is how powerful the presence of Mahaprabhu is. So Mahaprabhu went through Orissa, and when he got to the border of Orissa and camped there before proceeding any further, he was warned that once he crosses the river, he's in a very dangerous territory, ruled by a drunken Muslim governor, and there are many pirates also. So while Mahaprabhu's associates were reflecting on what to do, a spy came from the Muslim government. A spy dressed as a Hindu. Because back then, you could tell what ethnic group and religion you identify with just by your dress. So the spy dressed as a Hindu and came into the camp of Mahaprabhu. And then went back to the Muslim king to report. There is this extraordinary mendicant from Bengal, and he's surrounded by persons who are constantly chanting Hare Krishna and jumping and rolling on the ground. I've never seen anything like it before. And then the messenger starts jumping and rolling on the ground and chanting Hare Krishna. So the king decides, I must go see this personality. So he sends his secretary to arrange a meeting, a darshan with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the secretary, when he approaches Mahaprabhu's camp, is first interviewed by one of Mahaprabhu's persons who are government assistants. So you see the role, even in Mahaprabhu's Leela, of government connections. Mahaprabhu probably had his bhakta, his bhakta das, like you have here, communications, arranging everything, so that the leela goes on without any interference. So the secretary understands what Mahaprabhu's associates are thinking. You're coming from that drunkard Muslim king? What does he want to do? Fight? But the secretary assured, this is not about fighting. The Muslim king simply would like the audience of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu's managers said, he can come, but no weapons. And the secretary assured him, yes, yes, it'll be like that. No weapons. So the Muslim king approached. From a distance, he hadn't even gotten up close to Mahaprabhu. From a distance, he just the sight of Mahaprabhu far away just filled the Muslim governor with ecstatic love of Krishna. So he was drowning in love of Krishna even before he got into the immediate presence of Mahaprabhu. And when he finally arrived in the immediate presence of Mahaprabhu, he lamented, oh, why was I born in the situation I was born in? If I'd only been born in another situation, I would have had more of a chance to be with you. So Mahaprabhu's associates were astonished. This is the drunkard who's caused such danger for anyone crossing to his territory. Now he's drowning in ecstatic love of Krishna. What's going on here? But then Mahaprabhu's associates understood this is the effect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that even before the king entered into his immediate presence, just by hearing from his secretary and messenger about Mahaprabhu, he was saturated with ecstatic love. So the Muslim king said, is there anything I can do? This is the sign of genuine spiritual development. He's asking for service. So Mahaprabhu's associates said, yes, you can help Mahaprabhu cross the river safely without any danger from pirates. So the next day, the Muslim governor sent a brand new fleet of boats. And there was one crown jewel of a boat with special quarters, and that was for Mahaprabhu and his closest associates. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu crossed the river with no problem whatsoever. He was treated so luxuriously by the former drunkard Muslim king. And then, this is the most difficult part to understand. You see, Mahaprabhu had already left so many of his associates. Remember, Gadadhar Pandit wanted to go with him? Mahaprabhu turned him around. All right, you've gone far enough. And Gadadhar Pandit collapses on the ground. And Lord Chaitanya tells Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you tend to him. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as he's picking up Gadadhar Pandit off the ground, says, you know, this is the way the Leela is. Mahaprabhu would say goodbye to Ramananda Roy. Such a heart-wrenching scene. Ramananda Roy fell on the ground crying, and Mahaprabhu would pick him up, put him on his own lap, and cry on him. Very intense. But Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says something even more amazing. When it was time for Mahaprabhu to leave the Muslim governor who had arranged for his journey through a dangerous territory, the former drunkard Muslim governor broke out with ecstatic symptoms that Kaviraj Goswami says they're impossible to describe. So this is the effect of Krishna as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So certainly, we as followers of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can beg for the ability how to live in this material world without reaction. It seems so difficult. You have families, you have jobs, most of you. What are you going to do to avoid entanglement and karmic reaction? It seems so impossible. You may just throw your hands up in frustration and say, what's the point of even worrying about it? Just make money and enjoy. In a nice way, in a respectful way. But by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bhakti can be executed even within the present material existence. So this is the necessity of approaching Krishna through Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All right. Any questions? Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about the pastime of the Muslim governor king, the drunkard, and he, as soon as he sees Mahaprabhu from a distance, you know, he develops this love of Godhead.
Even before, just by hearing from his spy, the symptoms were already starting.
But then we're coming in front of Gornitha and we're hearing about Gornitha so much, but how is it that it's taking so long for the heart to get transferred?
What do you mean so long? Look at you compared to what you were before. So long. How old are you?
28.
This is so long. Just see the miracle of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How long have you been practicing as a devotee?
9 years.
9 years. So before you started your life as a devotee, did you ever think you'd be doing this?
No.
What were you doing before?
Studying, working
here in Melbourne. So your family sent you from India to Australia to find your fortune, yes? Well, you found the greatest fortune. So you had no intention of being a Krishna Bhakta. And now, for 9 years, you've been a very nice devotee. Isn't that a miracle? Isn't that Mahaprabhu's mercy? It acted so quickly. So continue like that all your life, and you'll see even more miracles performed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in your life. All the Vaishnavas are showing their appreciation, they're showering their blessings. So. Anything else? Yeah?
Reference for the mountain story, please.
Python Man, chapter 7, Canta. Prahlad Maharaj. Instructions for civilized human beings. Yes.
Maharaj, on one hand, Mahaprabhu doesn't want to meet King Prataputra.
Mm.
And then on the other hand, Mahaprabhu seems to agree to meet drunken Muslim king. How do we understand the two?
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is independent. Did you hear his question?
No.
He says, on the one hand, Maharaj Prataputra doesn't want to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't want to meet Maharaj Prataputra. On the other hand, he allows the Muslim drunkard governor to have his darshan. Mahaprabhu is independent with his mercy. Sometimes he follows the rigid system, and sometimes he doesn't. And he did give his mercy to Prataputra Maharaj. But yes, you're right. That's why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says it's impossible to understand the ecstatic symptoms shown by the Muslim governor. How? He was a drunkard before, terrorizing people. People didn't even want to go through his territory. And now he's drowning in ecstatic love of Krishna. There must be hope for us, yes? Yes.
So you spoke about the material mountain.
Everyone likes this mountain example. Can you see yourself climbing the mountain that's covered with sharp stones and you just have bare feet, but you're surrounded by your allies?
So I wonder about the spiritual mountain. It seems like material, spiritual life is also a huge challenge.
Spiritual life seems like a big challenge unless we have good association. The material energy will try to discourage you. This is why we need to surround ourselves with good association. Don't expect the material energy to encourage you in your spiritual life. The material energy's job is to harass you. To make spiritual life seem so difficult. What are you trying to do? You think you're a saint? Get real. Make money. Please your senses. Do it in a dignified Indian way, not Australian way. So expect nothing but harassment from the material energy. But a devotee knows how to use that harassment to push you faster to Krishna's lotus feet. It's like sometimes when I'm walking here from where I stay to the temple, there's this one house that always has a dog barking as soon as you walk by the house, as if the dog owns the neighborhood. Now suppose that dog somewhere or other got out and started coming behind us barking. It would be an annoyance. It would be harassment. But we walk faster. We get to the temple faster. The dog may be right at our heels. But we go faster. We arrive at the temple faster. So similarly, the harassment of the illusory energy makes the devotee take quicker shelter of Krishna. In that way, you see the double meaning of Maya. It means that which is not illusion, and it also means mercy. It's driving you to Krishna quicker. Because Krishna says, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mamamaya Dratya. This material energy of mine is impossible to overcome unless you do things my way. So the harassment of Maya makes you want to do things Krishna's way. That's how you use Maya in Krishna's service. That's the authorized use of Maya. Yes.
Thank you, Mother. Maharaj, in the purport, Prabhupada mentions about the loss of subtle nature.
About what? What's that?
The loss of subtle nature, where Prabhupada
explains. Laws of subtle nature.
Okay, subtle laws of nature, yes.
Yeah, and Prabhupada explains that if you eat in a sinful place, mm-hmm. you also beget the reaction of the place. Now, we live in a place where outside world is very sinful. Now, when we perform or have to have eat in the place, though we eat prasadam, do we still beget the reaction? Or
you mean if you have prasad, like at work, and you eat prasad at work? You're eating prasad, though you're not eating what they serve.
But the place itself is contaminated. So how do we understand that?
That's why we chant Hare Krishna carefully, because this world is so contaminated, you can't avoid contamination here, contamination there. Therefore, the Hare Krishna mantra chanting is so important. Everywhere is compromise. Everywhere is pollution. This is not the Vedic age. Therefore, Harinam, 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 Eva Kedam. Just make sure you're eating Krishna prasad. You're a family man? Your wife makes good prasad? All right. So, everything is fine. Yeah.
It appears contradictory. Like, King Rishabhadev used to say, he said that you should not become a guru unless you can liberate your dependence from birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, on my order, you just become a guru.
Yes. That means on my order, become qualified to rescue persons from repeated birth and death. What's the difficulty? To become a guru means to have qualification. Just like to become a mother or father means to be qualified. It's not separate, you know. You understand? Are your parents qualified? you don't know? He doesn't know. What about you? Your parents qualified? No. Can they rescue you from repeated birth and death? She says yes. You haven't thought about it, right? So they should just give you nice toys, right? Doing anything in this world for taking responsibility means you really have to know what you're doing. So please remember that. That's the essence of Prithu Maharaj's instruction. We're so eager to care and to love, but we don't understand that you have to be qualified to care and love. Whether it's care shown in a family or shown in the government, any responsibility you take, you have to be qualified. Otherwise, the laws of nature will punish you. Just like someone who practices medicine without a license, what happens? The government comes after you. You may go to a dentist. You assume the dentist is certified, has qualifications. But if the dentist has no qualification and has tried to open up a practice, then he'll be in legal trouble. In other words, if you want to act in a certain capacity, mother, father, husband, guru, chief executive, you have to have the qualifications. How do we get any qualifications in this day and age? When everything is so polluted, so corrupted? It is by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So let us never forget that. Because of the Panchatattva, we can actually get the mercy of Krishna. Ordinarily, it would not be possible. But, as Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, for one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, easy, difficult things become easy. And for one who forgets Lord Chaitanya, easy things become difficult. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna. When do you go? Okay. When did I first meet you? Year 2000.